powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're pleased to have in for the first time. What should we call you, Lydia? Are you Seattle Dragons correspondent,
insider.
Lydia Cruz?
Insider. I'm going to pull a Brock Heward on this morning with Danny and Gallant. Called himself a field analyst / sideline reporter.
Okay, field analyst / sideline reporter.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That's so, really concise and short.
When it comes to the Seattle Dragons of the upstart XFL, most if not all Seattle Dragons content will be coming from Lydia Cruz, and we're happy about that.
It's
a lot of pressure on you.
It's split duty. I can't take credit. It's Maura Dooley.
Oh, Maura Dooley's going to be doing it too.
Okay, yeah, Maura's so not of you. Here right now.
She's not. So
we're going to act herself. Like...
I miss you, Maura.
Yeah.
We're going to act like she's not part of it at all, even though clearly she is.
Maura Hooley.
Burn. So you've been interacting with the Seattle Dragons, I imagine, in the run-up here to opening day for the league. What's been your overall impression of the whole operation?
I've been referring to this as the Opportunity League, the League of Opportunities, because it's given Seattle an opportunity to watch football after the NFL concludes for this time when we're usually in the doldrums and we're kind of depressed and sad because we don't have a product to watch. Now we get football on our screens throughout the spring. It's also opportunity for the coaches, that have a lot of connections in the community, in Jim Zorn. It's for an opportunity for the guys themselves, a lot of them who were doing other jobs at the time that they were drafted, whether it was coaching high school football, working construction, and being at Home Depot grabbing some cement when you get the text that you've been drafted. Some of them were teaching high school. So I think it's an opportunity. That's what I look at it as.
I need to know which player was working at Home Depot grabbing cement.
Well, not working at Home Depot, okay. But working construction.
Oh,
Tawny Tupo, a name we're familiar with,
okay,
yes,
okay.
Was at Home Depot.
Yeah, Tom, that was actually an off-season job. Even when he was in and out of the NFL, he would always do construction in the off-season.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
so. Exactly. Yeah, you've been maintained.
Smart. Now, speaking of some names in particular, what are some names that are going to jump out to people here that are on the Seattle Dragons roster and even maybe the DC Defenders? What's going to make this matchup fun to watch?
Well, I think the two quarterbacks, it begins right there, because Brandon Silvers and Cardale Jones, they're named the team starters, but they also, there's other players on this team that have experience. I mean, even Keenan Reynolds is on the Seattle Dragons squad. Maybe he might get some snaps. I don't know. Plus, he's returning almost home to his college environment there, so I think that'll be fun to watch. Keenan Reynolds, you know his name from the Seahawks. Kason Williams, of course, people are going to be watching for because of his ties to this community, to UW, and to the Dragons. But I think it's actually for a lot of us, we're finding out too, because there's a lot we don't know. We haven't gotten to see practices half speed. We haven't really gotten to see, especially the defense, we haven't gotten to see them do a lot. And I think this will be sort of a matchup when we get to figure out who these guys are.
So the Seattle Dragons are facing Cardale Jones and the DC Defenders in the opener. This is on the road, right?
On the road at Audi Stadium in DC.
So when we're watching these, specifically in Seattle, you're watching these two teams kick it off, what's going to look different for fans of the NFL when they watch the XFL?
So the rule changes, there's five common sense rule changes, five timing changes, and five gameplay innovations. Okay. I think the gameplay innovations will be the ones that most people are curious about, whether it's the changes to kickoff or sort of decentivizing fair catches on punting. I think everybody is really excited about the overtime shootout possibility, but who knows when we will get an overtime.
Week one.
Yeah, let's go. Week one, game one.
Yeah.
But I think, too, the point after scoring is a lot of people are fascinated by just the strategy element. Being able to score 1, 2, or 3 points, how that will change a one-score game and a two-score game, how if you're down by one score, if you're down by two scores. So I think the armchair quarterback community is going to be really excited about that one.
Yeah.
And then the speed of the game, too. 25-second play clock, things just constantly moving. There's a dedicated official just to ball spotting so that things are going to move at this fast
you would pace. Think the NFL would have that.
You think and just and I was listening last night to your interview with Tom Luganville and how he was describing this, but that what does that mean, Lydia? What does that mean for a dedicated ball spotter on the official referee? Is he going to be chasing the ball all around the field, or what does that look like?
I think it's just literally what it sounds like. He is dedicated to spotting the ball. They did so much research on this that it takes an average of 7 seconds to like spot the ball, and so that's what went into the whole development of the 25-second play clock. And I just think, yeah, it's a we. These are guys that haven't played at this pace, so it's going to be fascinating. We've never even seen it at this pace. And now these guys, who we haven't gotten much on tape, we're getting to see them in this fast-paced action. So you mentioned Tom Luganville, though, and I thought his comments on Dragons Insider this week were great because he talked about the access element. That's something that I think that is going to be fascinating just from we're in radio, we're in media, we're going to see unprecedented levels of access to the players yeah. and to the coaches and to the game itself.
So, and by the way, we're talking to Lydia Cruz. She is, oh God, I forgot already. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You can call me anything you want.
No.
Mother of Dragons.
What's her face?
What is your official title?
A Dragons Insider.
Dragons Tom. Insider. Okay. All right. You know, I should probably.
This is Lydia's opportunity to come up with the coolest name possible.
I know. Call her, Mother of Dragons.
Lydia Khaleesi Cruz.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about the access Please. To the players. Is that something that the league has sort of mandated? They've gone around and said, like, they had to go around and get all these players on board. I guess, are the players on board for all this?
Well, I would think that a lot of these guys, that's their whole goal, right? Is to be accessible. They want to get things on tape. They want to connect with fans because they're looking for, this is the league of opportunity, as I mentioned. They would like to get back on an NFL roster or just at least continuing the game that they love and connecting with fans, especially in this market where fans are so loyal and they will follow people wherever they go into whatever ventures they do. I think that it didn't really have to take much talking to get a lot of them on board. Plus, a lot of them are just really humble, kind people to begin with. So they make that easy.
One aspect that I think is going to be really cool to watch and to keep up with that gameplay is typically in the NFL, only the quarterback has an earpiece in his helmet
yeah.
and can communicate, or the coach can communicate. Well, every single player, right? Or is it every single skill player?
It's still in sort of a development phase, but yeah, technically every player could have access to that headset.
So every player has access. They have an earpiece in their ear and they're hearing the calls. So instead of having a traditional up-tempo situation where you're using signals and signs and all that you are directly communicating to the players, I think that that's going to be a really cool thing to see how that comes together.
And you get to sort of do the wiretap. Like the broadcast will have access to that communication. And when else do you get to hear something like that?
Is that controlled by the fans or by the broadcast?
I believe by the broadcast. So I'm not sure if there's certain times when we'll hear it. This is one of the things we'll figure out on Saturday. But there are times where we'll get to hear Jim Zorn talking to Brandon or talking to players out there. The theory being, too, that you can eliminate the huddle if you need to and you can go up tempo. So I think that'll be fascinating.
It's almost like it's part mic'd up. Not yeah. part, but like you're yeah. watching the game, and imagine if you had a mic'd up moment during the game when you can hear it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. how does that change your strategizing too? Because if you know this is going to be public, how does that change your way you're communicating?
Well, you can't talk about other players. I don't know if that ever happens, but I'm imagining that awkward kind of three-way phone call of like, oh my God, these receivers, and the receivers are like, I can hear you.
Yeah. You don't think we're going to run into a sign-stealing scandal like week one? Are we?
Tom, already with the conspiracy theories, I like it. Maybe.
Well, think about it. I mean, we've got signals going back and forth, and it's on the broadcast. Who knows?
So we know about a couple different rule changes. We know it's going to be fast-paced. We know about a couple names, including former Seahawks, Keenan Reynolds, Kason Williams, BJ Daniels.
Isaiah Battle.
Yes. And okay, so how can fans who are unfamiliar, how can they tune in? Where can they watch it? Who should they be following?
Mm-hmm.
Where do they listen during the week to get info? If I'm trying to get into the XFL, I'm trying to scratch that football itch, where do I start?
Great question, Stacey. The game itself is the first thing I think you should tune into. 11 a.m. at Pacific Standard Time, 2 p.m. Eastern, and that's going to be on ABC this weekend. It's the very first game kicking off this season, this iteration
that's
of
Saturday?
The XFL. Okay. So, yeah, we get to be part of history as the Dragons franchise do, and that's going to be Greg McElroy, Steve Levy, Tom Luginbill, and Diana Rossini. So it's an all-star crew. And then also later in the day, Brock Heward, I found out, is going to be on the Fox call for that game. So make sure to tune into that one. I think it's 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time start
Kurt
time
Menefee
on Fox.
And Joel Klatt,
yeah,
Brock
all-star,
Heward.
Wow. All-star cast.
One of the funny things is Luginbill, when he was on with you, he said that if they wanted to, the sideline reporter could stand next to the head coach.
Yeah,
He can go anywhere he wants on the sideline. I could see Brock just standing next to
him. He's going to try to get on the field.
He is going to annoy those coaches
He is. He was told to be that crazy. If a guy makes a big play and is coming to the sideline, that Brock can go on the field and grab him and walk off the field with him and interview.
Well, he's not going to be doing. He's going to be chest bumping.
And you know, Brock, he takes everything and then goes like 3 steps first.
Wait a minute,
so
Brock.
He will be in the huddle in like week two.
What if he has to go back on the field? For
no,
the
if the player is coming to the sideline.
Oh, if he's
then
out
if
the
he
field.
Sees them coming, he can go
We're
out.
We're just
meet
jokingly
him.
Saying Brock is about to be in the huddle. Like, what are we thinking right now?
But that element is fascinating. If Brock wants to, or if these guys want to, they can go stand next to the head coach and think about how secretive a lot of coaches are and how their personality, too, is just ultimate competitor. I think that's going to be fascinating.
Okay.
But you can just never get mad at Brock.
Jim Zorn is Brock's quarterback coach. If Brock's standing with him, annoying him, obviously.
Okay, so I'm trying to get into football on Saturday. I'm tuning in 11 a.m. to see the Seattle Dragons and DC Defenders. Then what do I do during the week? We have your show, 710 ESPN Seattle, on Wednesdays.
Yes, please. But if you want to be a part of, I think, that first game at CenturyLink Field, too, I think you should be, because the report came out about they're leading the way in season ticket sales. Over 20,000 people expected next Saturday. I think you want to be a part. It's cool to be a part of something and be on the ground floor and be the hipster person that can say that you were part of it before everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Lydia Cruz, Dragons insider.
Mother of Dragons. Got it right.
Got it right the last time around. Thanks for joining us, Lydia. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lydia.
I don't know why that was so hard for me. Seattle Dragons insider, Lydia Cruz. Not that hard, Tom. Get it right, bud.
You eventually got it.
Yeah,
I mean, you had to write it down, but like, we don't need to peel back the curtain.
I like the helmet. I'm trying to be positive about this. By the way, okay, so I think that there's a difference between things that the NFL may learn from the XFL and take, like ideas, and things that just work better for the XFL. Lydia was talking about the points after touchdown. They're replacing that with like plays from scrimmage, and depending on the distance from the end zone you go, you can get like 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, something like that. To me, that's great for this league. That's not something I would want to see applied to the NFL, because the NFL, to me, is about getting the ball at the 25 or wherever and trying to, you know, eke your way on every play strategically down the field into the other end zone. I don't want more points and more emphasis being put on things like a kick or some goofy play from scrimmage after I've just worked my tail off to get 6 points.
And could you imagine? Could you imagine the amount of controversy that you would end up having if you know, hey, this coach didn't go for two at this time, or he should have gone for three? Like it just, like Lydia pointed out, the armchair quarterback that most fans are probably going to enjoy that aspect of it. I think in the NFL, it would just be just pandemonium.
It would be stupid, though.
I think it would be just too much.
It would take away the essence of football. Is in the trench, that battle in the trenches, the battle between coordinators, the quarterbacks, whatever, trying to get that ball down the field into the end zone. That's what matters. That's where the emphasis with points should be. Not this other gimmicky stuff. Now, in the XFL, great. Try everything. I think it's fine.
The other interesting part that's going to be something to keep an eye on is actually the coaches have zero challenges. They have zero challenges because of the emphasis on playing fast, but what they do have is they have an eye in the sky referee, and anything that he says or anything that he sees needs to be corrected or overturned. They can do that, and then they will quickly get it done without much fanfare. So it's going to be quick decisions. Okay, we missed this, we missed that. There isn't really a coach's challenge, but they have the authority to get it right, get it done, and it not be this big stoppage in play. So that's something that I'm going to be interested in.
Yep.
You know, I don't think you take away coaches' challenges in the NFL, but overall, just that concept of, oh, there's another official that can watch the video and actually get it right, and that they can go against the referee's original call and have it not be the biggest deal in the world. What a novel idea.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's absurd that we haven't got to that point in the NFL. So I'm excited to see what it looks like in the XFL.
Guys, tell me, what's the purpose of this? Teams will be able to attempt two forward passes on the same play so long as the ball never crosses the line of scrimmage before the second pass. Does that mean, like, if I'm Russell Wilson, I snap the ball, or the ball gets snapped to me, and I'm running backwards, uh-oh, I get to pass the ball forward to, like, C.J. Procise, who happens to be sitting there, and then he can throw it again?
Yes.
Yep, as long as C.J.'s not in front of the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Or, you know, for example, like, a lot of times when teams are trying to do a double pass, it's pretty obvious when it's happening because the receiver who's running a bubble route or a smoke screen, they are going way behind the line of scrimmage, and the quarterback is having to make sure that he's throwing the ball backwards, right? Well, now it's not as easy to tell if it's a double pass,
right?
Because he can throw the ball forward as long as he's behind the line of scrimmage. Now it's still in play. So can you do that on every play, or is it just...
It doesn't say here.
Okay. That part,
I think you can.
That part will be, you know, it'll be very tough on defenders in terms of to interpret. Is it a trick play or is it an actual receiver screen? So that's one that will probably be utilized quite a bit, I would imagine.
Yeah. Again, I wish this league all the luck in the world. Get it, Luck, Oliver Luck.
No.
Stacey doesn't like, you know, getting the courtesy laugh for Tom because
no one ever laughs at
my joke.
Where
was that for me?
Where was that for me? I've had lots of great puns in the last at least 48 hours.
48 hours? I laugh at everything you do.
Yeah, because I'm funny, Tom.
She said Tom has said you're like the funniest person he knows.
No.
He said,
roll the tape. Stacey, you're the funniest person I know because you're always trying to make other people like you over in the control room.
Well, funny's funny.
Hey, you do whatever it takes.
He was laughing at me, not with me.
Hey, what about those socks you tweeted out? Those things were great.
They were
I was
great.
The only
My mom
one that
gave
reacted.
Them to me. You did, Tom. Thank
I thought
you for
they were
that.
So
I hit the like
cute.
Button.
They were, huh?
I hit the like button.
After the fact.
Oh, sorry.
You know, you weren't there first.
Okay, my apologies.
Let's run through a couple of headlines here first, and I'll always be with you, Stacey.
Thank you.
Don't worry.
Thank you so much.
You guys got any interest in Emmanuel Sanders? I say that so disparagingly. Hold on, let me do that over again. You guys have any interest in Emmanuel Sanders?
No. I don't have any interest in Emmanuel Sanders.
Use for him?
No. Look, Emmanuel Sanders to me is a guy that I think does a much better job in... or is better suited for a true West Coast intricate, you know, passing system like Kyle Shanahan utilized him with the San Francisco 49ers. I think that he fits that scheme very well. And the Seahawks, they just don't have that style of offense. Now, I think like a Randall Cobb, that guy interests me. He's got explosion. He's got playmaking ability. He's a very good player when things break down because he played with Aaron Rodgers for so long. So I would rather see, if you're going to invest in a older slot receiver, I would rather invest in Randall Cobb than I would Emmanuel Sanders.
He's still under 30, Cobb.
Yeah, I know, but I think that wide receiver would be like 5 or 6 tops on the list of priorities I think the Seahawks should have this offseason. If you're going to spend free agent money, a lot of money, I want it to be on the defensive line.
Yeah, the big money.
And that's been checked.
Yeah, but I don't think Emmanuel Sanders or Cobb is going to command that big top dollar type of contract.
Yeah, I mean, a wide receiver isn't going to get as much money as any kind of like top tier defensive end would, but I don't know. There's so many other things that you need.
Stacey, you know what's amazing?
What, Tom?
How funny you are.
Now you're just pandering.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at it. I like it.
By the way, for a guy like AJ Green, who's been a Pro Bowler every single year of his career, coming off a year where he was injured for most of it, how's he going to be viewed?
I still think he's going to command top dollar in the market. I mean,
wide receiver dollar.
Yeah, top wide receiver dollar, yes. And I don't think that necessarily he's going to get the same money as Amari Cooper by any stretch of the imagination, but he's still going to get paid a pretty decent chunk because I view AJ Green's injury more so of him. Look, it was a legitimate injury, but I just think that he was more conservative about this year, waiting to see what was going to happen with, you know, how things were going to be under Zach Taylor in the Cincinnati Bengals. There was really no rush for him to try and get back this season. So you're looking at a guy who's pretty healthy. The question remains is, are the Bengals going to franchise tag him, then try and trade him? Like, how are they going to approach this whole thing?
Right now, I'm going to ask a question. What's on tap, guys?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
Number two, Gonzaga hosting Loyola Marymount. Not to be mixed up with Loyola of Chicago with Kyle's favorite sister, Sister Jean?
Sister Jean.
Sister Jean.
God rest her soul.
What?
You really hate Sister Jean, right? No, she's fine.
She's still alive.
She's fine. Yeah. She's fine.
Okay. She's just resting.
God bless her soul.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
That game's at 8 p.m. at CBS Sportsnet. I'm not nearly as harsh on Gonzaga this year as I have been in years past because...
Really? Why is that?
Well, because last year I thought there were a handful of teams... good teams that could beat Gonzaga like in the later rounds, and guess what happened? They did. Texas Tech, thank you very much. I don't think that there are as many good teams in the field this year. If Gonzaga ends up getting a number one seed, which they probably will, they should romp to the Final Four. No excuses.
Checked. They should. And look, every game that they have played, my mother-in-law is a huge Gonzaga fan, and she's been complaining how much Gonzaga's blown everybody out. There was one close game, and she was like, I couldn't believe that this game was actually close against San Francisco. But ultimately, the Zags have been playing really good, and they are in a position where Mark Few is just continuing to recruit internationally. And it should be interesting this year in terms of if this is a year where they could potentially go and win it all, this should be a prime year for them to do it.
I actually don't think that this year's team is as good as last year's team, just in terms of overall talent, size, etc. But given the – look, you never know what's going to happen in March. You just don't. Somebody could get hurt. You're running to some crazy hot team. I'm just saying theoretically on paper. Last year I was really hard on them. For the same reason, they were blowing out everybody in their conference because they had no competition. They did beat Duke earlier in the year. That was one very quality win. But other than that, I just didn't feel like they were battle-tested. As it turned out, they weren't. This year, I don't think there are any excuses. I think that they could actually make it to a Final Four, basically, no problem.
You know what this has inspired me to think is that you should have an apology tour, but for teams, and it should be for a period of a year or less, you have to actively root for and be encouraged by teams that you've either made fun of, been hard on, or have actively disliked. Just to test yourself.
Like I have to sort of
just
like cheer them? Like,
kind of, like as a social experiment. I think it should be Tom's fandom apology tour, and it's the teams and players and schools that you've given the hardest time to. For like a period of 6 months, you have to like watch their games and like them.
Let's think about that.
I'm going to let it marinate.
Yeah, let's let it marinate. Or bake.
Yeah.
Saute.
Yeah.
We're debating Jadeveon Clowney. Is this guy any good? Let's talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
You know, I said all season long that the Seahawks, especially on defense, they kind of lacked a viciousness. They lacked an attitude. You know, before, when they had guys like Sherman and Bennett and whoever, they definitely had those two things. They also had guys that were polarizing. Sherman was polarizing. Michael Bennett was definitely polarizing. Is Jadeveon Clowney polarizing in his own way? Not his personality, I mean. I mean, as far as his production, like interpreting Jadeveon Clowney's production has become this like really difficult, semi-science, like academic task. Like, is he productive or is he not productive? And if so, in what specific way is he productive?
I think part of it...
And are the guys around him not?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is because that position has become, outside of quarterback, the highest paid position in the league, right? And it makes sense. If you're paying, you know, the quarterback 30 however many million dollars a year and he's going to be where you're investing 15% of your salary cap, then the guy you're going to also invest in on the other side of the ball is going to be whoever's going to stop that person. So I think the same way that we've always kind of had debates about whether or not a quarterback is worth the money or any kind of star is worth the money, it's become that way with defensive ends. And unlike a quarterback where you can individualize some more of his stats, it's harder to look at a defensive end who's technically part of a defensive line, or even part of a whole kind of front seven, depending on, you know, how things operate, and to isolate just his contributions.
What is, okay, I'm going to...
That's what makes me frustrated in this situation, because there's a couple things. Is one, Clowney, without question, is a freakish talent.
We know that.
He is a freakish talent, and we do know that, right? We watch him, we see his ability to split double teams, his ability to get TFLs, tackles for loss on the field, and you recognize the talent. But, Tom, as you sit here, and the reason why this has become such this, you know, difficult thing to quantify is because his statistics in terms of sacks don't necessarily back it up. His pressure rates are there, but how much do you actually, you know, define Clowney's pressure rates into winning football, into him, you know, really being that impactful player that is worth $21 million, $21, $22 million. And the thing is that I come back to Clowney, to me, is the best overall defensive end in terms of the pass rush and the running game. He is an overall disruptor, and I think that is something that people undervalue with Clowney. If you just look at his sack numbers, and trust me, I want the sack numbers to be around 10 as well, just as well as everybody else. But his contributions are also in the running game, more so than a lot of these other pass rushing specialists that you see out on the market. And if you bolster that defensive line and give him another guy that is more of a pass rushing specialist, it is going to bode well for Clowney's production, and it's going to bode well for your defensive line production overall. And I think that's why you have to sign this guy, because he gives you elite level star talent.
Okay, if his pressure rates, well, forget about sacks, but if his pressure rate numbers are there, whatever you want to call those, then how come all these teams are able to still throw the ball on them all the time?
Because you're looking at, when you're talking about pressure rate, I mean, for him, his exact number, I'm trying to remember where it's at in terms of percentage, it's still, when you talk about it, like 20%.
But it doesn't,
somewhere around there.
But it
so think about
matter.
20% of your offensive snaps, he's getting pressure on the quarterback. That does not mean that he's sacking the quarterback, that the quarterback is able to still throw the football. And if 20% of your snaps are coming, or 20% of those snaps are coming from one player, that's not enough. You need that pressure percentage overall to be higher for it to actually be effective across the entire defensive line. So it's not enough for just Clowney to have that high pressure rate. You've got to have it from more contribution from everybody else.
Yeah,
and there simply wasn't.
It's kind of like looking at the Rams defense and saying, like, if Aaron Donald is one of, if not the best defensive player in the league, then why did they have this record, or why did their defense fall to here? And it's like, well, because when it's one guy, the more it's concentrated to one guy or two guys, if they're in like different position groups, it's hard. Like, you get double teamed. You know, people scheme against you. They know how to beat you when you have like one or two strengths, and they know how to isolate those guys. So, I mean, I think it's something where you could point to any of the best defenders in the league and say, why isn't this guy doing more? And the answer is usually they're doing a lot, but it's not enough.
But we've seen him in Houston with other great defenders, Whitney Mercilus, J.J. Watt. I mean, and he definitely didn't lift up to his freakish talent and his billing coming out of college down there. And the excuse there was that he was in a 3-4, and he wasn't used to playing that.
Right.
Like, it seems like there's always some excuse.
But it's how are you looking at him, though? I think when you bring those up, people are looking at him and saying, well, he was only 9 sacks, 9.5 sacks. But he also had a lot of tackle for losses. He was a disruptor. He was a guy that made a lot of plays. So maybe, you know, people had these expectations of, you know, first round pick, he should be a 15 sack guy, or somewhere in that range, and he wasn't fulfilling that, but he was doing a lot of other things that was worthwhile. I mean, people forget that, you know, Clowney had 2 touchdowns this year for the Seahawks. Those are game changing plays.
They are game changing plays, but they're also kind of fluky. Look, if they get another guy on the other side and they pay Jadeveon Clowney, he better be a game wrecker. And those sack numbers had better be there. They better be like between 15 and 20.
And you can hold him to that standard. I don't think his sack numbers, here's the thing, I'm not going to discount him from the ability of getting 15 to 20 sacks, but I'm not going to hold him to that. I would love to see him get anywhere between 10 and 15.
Sure.
That would be great. But if he is able to give me 10 sacks, so to say, and his tackle for loss numbers are extremely high, I'm going to be happy, because that is a great contribution that you're getting overall from Clowney in both factors of the game that you want. And if it opens him up to get more sacks, more tackle for losses, and for him to be more disruptive, that's fantastic. I think that's the upside that you're getting there.
They were 27th against the pass last year in terms of yards per game. If you get another guy on the other side, that guy better play especially well, and Jadeveon Clowney better elevate even from what we saw this year. If he gives the same type of production that we saw this year, plus another guy on the other side, they're not going to go from 27th to first.
No.
They're going to go from like 27th to 18th. That's not going to be good enough.
It won't be. You're absolutely
right. I think
they
could go higher than that.
Well, yeah, I mean,
just based on one player?
Well,
if you get a handful of difference makers, you can certainly make that jump. I mean, who knows what it's going to have to be, but look at the 49ers. I mean, I know that they made a lot of offseason moves, but if the key ones are going to be Nick Bosa, Dee Ford, and then maybe like Quan Alexander, so say those are three moves. They went from essentially 23rd, 24th to first against the pass and second overall. Last year to this year.
Yeah, from 18 to 19. So, you know, I think, Stacey, you were originally pessimistic about this defense being able to make a jump from 19 to 20, you know, 2020. But after looking at the 49ers a little bit deeper, it's like, yeah, I mean, sometimes it is just acquiring, you know, two to three more players that can make your defense significantly better.
And I know the Seahawks don't have a number two overall pick to go get Nick Bosa, and maybe they don't have the money to sign Jadeveon Clowney for $21 million plus add a top-tier linebacker or pay a lot for linebacker the way that the San Francisco 49ers did for Alexander. But I think if you hit on three key difference makers and areas that significantly improve your pass rush, it makes it easier for your linebackers, which are already set. It makes it easier for your secondary. I don't think it's a stretch to say you can go from better than, you know, 27th to 18th. I mean, you could make a big jump.
That's true. I'm just not sure if Clowney needs to be part of that. Ask me what my alternative to Clowney is.
What's your alternative to Clowney?
I don't know.
Well, that's great.
Not my problem.
I can come up with that alternative, and we will. We will go through both of those scenarios of what that looks like.
We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're coming away, man.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Wild show today on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. It almost got personal at one point, eh, Jake?
What?
Yeah. We almost went to fisticuffs.
Yeah, this Jadeveon Clowney thing is like, it's getting personal between me and Jake. There's going to be some fireworks over the next couple of months.
Sure.
Or next couple of weeks.
And there will
be
one clear winner in this.
Who's that going to be?
Me.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Generally, it does go to
Stacey. Because Jake and I are just going to kill each other.
It'd be a Pyrrhic victory for whichever one of you takes it. And then Stacey will just be left shining.
Welcome to my show.
It'll be fun. It's going to be a fun debate all the way through it. And I think that there's valid points on each side. That's the thing is when you look at this and say, all right, Clowney to me, unbelievable talent, right? Unbelievable talent, somebody that I think that they should be willing to invest, you know, the $20, $21 million mark. And I think it's something that they are willing to spend, that they are knowing that it's probably going to cost, you know, somewhere in that range. But if it gets past that, which it easily could in this market, if you walk away from it, is that the best thing for you? And what do you do with that extra, you know, so to speak, cash that you were anticipating spending on Clowney?
All right. I need to ask an X's and O's question.
Yes. Fire away, Tom.
Both of you can answer. Because we talk about the strengths that Jadeveon Clowney has. It's not just about sack numbers. It's not just about the TFLs. It's about being able to stop the run, a couple other things. Why is an edge rusher stopping the run at all?
I know the answer. I'm going to go ahead and let Jake take this one.
Oh, okay. Well, big part of that is when you're talking about an edge rusher or a defensive end stopping the run, well, one, first off, your job is to keep contained.
Right.
That's
so
number
if the guy's
one.
Running right at you, that's one thing.
That's one thing. But usually when you have a defensive end that is able to stop the run, that means that either he's one stout in his gap responsibilities, like a Michael Brockers, for example. He's a big-bodied guy that just is hard to move, all right? But you look at Clowney, and you look at Frank Clark, you look at some of these guys that have special twitch to them, they are disruptors. They can you know, knife in through a gap, like we saw Michael Bennett do for so many years, that he can beat a tackle or a guard to the spot because he has great instincts and anticipation. That to me is very impressive as a defensive end, because you are absolutely beating and dominating the guy in front of you the spot. And that's how really a defensive end gets himself involved in the run game outside of just holding his gap responsibilities.
But if you have defensive tackles and linebackers who are better at handling that than, say, what the Seahawks had last year, Jadeveon Clowney wouldn't have to worry as much about that, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Sure. Yes, that is correct. So if, you know, Jaron Reed, for example, last year, had played up to the standard of which we thought he was
from the year before.
From the year before, it would have helped out a lot. It would have helped out Clowney. It would have helped out Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. And so I think those are all things that you have to consider when you're looking at restructuring this defensive line.
I put a piece up at 710sports.com last night. It's just sort of stuff that was rattling around in my mind, much of which we talked about on today's show. But I graded last year's offseason a B-, looking back, like knowing what we know now. A lot of it still looks really good. Schneider traded Frank Clark, got draft picks that netted us DK Metcalf, great thing. We got Marquise Blair, but we never used him. I think he's a good player, good draft pick, but didn't, you know, for whatever reason, didn't work out on the field last year. Hopefully it'll turn into something this year. But if they turn in another B-, off season, will that be enough to get them back to the Super Bowl? I actually think it will. I don't think that they need too many more impact players before this is an excellent football team. You've got guys coming back, Chris Carson, Will Dissly. You know you're going to add, whether it's Clowney or whoever, through free agency and the draft. If you have a B- and you hit on like three guys may sound like a lot, but if you hit on three, I think you're in great shape.
Yeah, I go back to that quote by Russell Wilson that we kept kind of analyzing and figuring out what he meant by it. And I think what the team needs to do to get maybe an A, in my mind, this offseason, isn't just to add to the pass rush, but to go back to that word, stars. I think this team has done a lot, and has been great at adding depth. They turned four draft picks last year into 11. They added a lot of depth through free agency this year and the year prior. They haven't added a lot of stars. And I think if you, that costs more, right? You don't get stars usually with your fifth, sixth, seventh round pick. Sometimes you do. They have. But, you know, you don't get stars trying to save in free agency. But I think that they might only be a couple stars removed.
And remember, you pointed out before that one star that they did sign was their own quarterback before any of this even happened last year. So that's pretty important to remember. And Bobby Wagner as well.
Yes. Yeah. And that part of it is going to be crucial. It's going to be crucial for this team to identify the right stars that they need to get through free agency, and then also looking at the holes that they feel like they can fill through the draft. And I think that that's something that people get mixed up in, is that you have to be strategic as you're looking at it from the Seahawks to say, okay, if we're going to spend our cap dollars on superstar players in free agency, where does that need to go? Who are the guys or the positions that we need immediate impact that we can guarantee? There, we can all acknowledge and understand that there are some positions that drafting young talent, it is harder to translate and be immediate stars when you're picking in the second and third rounds of the draft. If you can, of course, you can get any position in the top 10 and get a superstar level talent that can contribute right away. Mm-hmm. But the Seahawks aren't there. They're winning, and so they're picking late in the first round. They're picking in the second, third round. So what positions through the draft can they find immediate impact players? And then from there, that's where you come up with the plan. All right, we feel like we can draft these positions. Now it's about filling up the other positions through free agency so that we can find guys immediately to fix, not just three, but four or five. That way we can get maybe potentially six guys overall, three on offense, three on defense.
You
that
think
can
you're
going to
hit
team.
On three stars on both sides of the ball?
If you do it right through free agency and through the draft. That's potential. I think that you're more likely to do that through free agency than you are through the draft. The draft is always a crapshoot.
God, if we hit on one guy, Jake. We didn't hit on any last year.
Well, that one guy could be Jadeveon Clowney, Tom. Tom!
I don't count that. He's already here.
But he wasn't last year.
Stacey,
they brought that guy in.
I've already played with that toy. I want a new toy.
No.
All right, tomorrow's going to be the Friday edition of Tom, Jake, and Stacey. We'll try to argue about something else. This is 710 ESPN Seattle.